Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, right here from the bowels of the boiler room at the McBurney compound, coming at you once again this week. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to have everybody with us as I slide back into my regular routine. I've been knocked out of my regular routine significantly lately, and that messes with a fella. Messes with everything from your, from your mental health to your physical health to like a bad hair day. It's just not good. So we're anxious to get back into our regular routine, uninterrupted by interruptions is what we're looking forward to. And we wish all of you the same. Thank you very much. We're going to get to the immigration crisis and the catch and release and all of that and the plan to dump illegals into Nancy Pelosi's gated community and Bernie Sanders' house. And if they can get past the machine guns and the barbed wire, they'll drop them off at at the Democrat. I can't think of another Democrat. See, I'm discombobulated. Normally I can rattle them off. Normally I can just rattle them all off. But I'm a little slow on the uptake this week, and I hope you'll bear with me. So we'll come back to that, though, and we'll talk about Julian Assange and that, maybe SpaceX. Maybe we'll come back to all that, but let's start with a headline that as soon as the headline writers wrote the headline, you knew that this story was destined to be featured on the Weekly Worldview. The headline screams from the Daily Mail, a broadsheet from London. Is America becoming godless? Question mark. It's a question. This is from the Unreligion file. The Daily Mail reports that the number of Americans who identify as having no religion, no religion, has risen 266% since 1991. Isn't that strange? Odd how that corresponds with the release of the very first Nirvana album. I'm just saying, that's all. I'll leave it at that. That right now, the godless, the no religion are tied statistically in a dead heat with Catholics and evangelicals, two dying religions, Catholics and evangelicals. On the rise, the nuns, they call themselves. Well, I mean N-O-N-E-S, okay? Nuns, yeah. This survey's been taken every year since 1972. And America has been getting godlesser and godlesser ever since. Yeah. A political science professor at Eastern Illinois University said that experts have several theories. Experts, he says, have theories on why it is that America's gone godless. Why have the nuns risen so dramatically? He says one theory is that people used to lie about what they were. Because in America, in a previous generations, it was unacceptable to say in public that you had no religion. You know, that's probably some truth to that. Back in the day, I mean, you had to at least act like you believed in God or people thought you were some kind of freak. It'd be hard to get a job. It'd be hard to get a bank loan if you were an out atheist. That kind of garbage wasn't tolerated. You had to at least toe the line and fake it. Because we all had a common understanding that there was a God. And if you didn't agree with that, you were an outcast. You were a strange person. You were unfit in many ways for many things. But not now. Now you can be out and open about being, an atheist. So some truth to that, I'm sure. Another theory is all the anti-gay, anti-abortion, religious right leaders and their vicious, hateful rhetoric. Yeah, it's driven people who want to know God away from right-wing religious fanatics is what they're. And so now I think that's false. I disagree with that. No. That's not it at all. Because people who want to know God people who actually want to know God want to know the truth. You see, and the truth is murder and fornication are deadly lifestyles, deadly sins that lead to death. So it's not the morality of the church. It's not the morality. It's the hypocrisy of the church. A church that says they believe in God, yet they tolerate the killing of innocent people, especially unloved, innocent people who cannot defend themselves. Now, can you imagine a worse thing to advocate than killing unloved people who can't defend themselves? I can't imagine anything worse, and that's what I would guess half the evangelical churches in America actively support it, or they silently tolerate it. And that's what drives people out of the church. Nobody wants to sit there and listen to some hypocritical pastor asking you to give him 10% of your income while he advocates abortion and homos marrying each other. That's it. So fornication and the killing of innocent people, that's not the problem. The church should be preaching against that. And at least the Catholic Church puts on a face about it. I mean, obviously the molestations behind the curtains, that doesn't help with their situation. But that goes back to the hypocrisy, that's all. And there's another thing. There's another thing that I think is contributing to the godlessness of America. It's that the majority of people, they want to have sex outside marriage without consequence. That's all there is to it. I mean, if you're raised in the modern American culture and you are soaked in the modern American pop culture, movies, music, videos, books, magazines, newspapers, the internet, if you grow up in that, you're going to have a natural desire to have sex without consequences outside of marriage. And so since the church has allowed the government to make all that legal, so now what right does the church have to limit any pervert sexual expression? So why go to church? There's a bunch of hypocrites. That's all. There are a few pockets left, though. There are a few churches. I only know of, three that I'm aware of that actually preach on a regular basis against the killing of unloved people who can't defend themselves. Yeah, so abortion is a euphemism, by the way, and I'm tired of it. So abortion is something that happens spontaneously in nature due to the fallen nature of the universe. Sometimes a pregnancy aborts spontaneously, the baby dies, that's an abortion. But killing an unloved person who's so small that they can't defend themselves, that's what they call abortion. And I'm going to call it what it is. It's the killing of unloved people who cannot defend themselves. That's what it is. All right. So, yes, is America becoming godless? The question asks, the Daily Mail asks, yes, America is becoming godless. But we here at the McBurney Compound are not. And hopefully, those of you who are listening, if you are, hopefully you won't be there. Hopefully we'll convince you to look into this whole God thing. But before we do that, actually, we've already done that. We've already done that. But before we do that, I want to get your opinion. Actually, I don't want to get your opinion. That's why we don't take calls. I don't have time for other people's opinions. People give me their opinion all the time. I don't have time for it. This is the 1 hour a week where I get to give my opinion, and you just have to listen. So I want you to listen to this. The question is screamed from a digitaltrends.com website. This is one of these tech sites. The headline screams, "Are we living in a simulation?" It's a question, see. This MIT scientist says it's more likely than not. Now, I have noticed a trend as of late that these multiverse, simulation, alien spaceships, there seems to be an avalanche of this stuff. And all these stories are bulging out from the seams at the Science Really file, which is where I pulled this one. The author over there, Digital Trends, says, "What if I told you that physical reality is an illusion and we all live in a computer simulation?" Okay, well, let's just stop right there and I can answer his question. I would roll my eyes, and then if he continued to talk, I might slap him and say, "Just shut up. Just get out of here with that. I'm not even going to entertain that kind of stupidity and foolishness." But that's my response. Now, that wouldn't make this as entertaining as it's about to get, because I'm going to let him talk here. And we're going to go into, we've got A new book by Rizwan Virk. Rizwan Virk is his name. Why? Because normal white men, they don't become engineers and physicists anymore. It's always people with 11 vowels in their name from the third world because they still have a thirst for learning and education. Whereas here in the West, the average white male, he's addicted to pornography, weed, and sports. And he's not getting a degree in computer science like Rizwan Virk did here. Congratulations, Rizwan, but he's not that bright a fellow anyway. He's a computer scientist and a video game developer, and he's written a book called The Simulation Hypothesis. A hypothesis, I tell you. If you matriculate in the government schools, we'll give you time right now to grab your dictionary and look up the word hypothesis. Yes, that's the... And anyway, in his book, Rizwan calls our physical world into question. He calls our physical world into question. It's... As he is speaking words that travel through the air as sound waves and strike other people's eardrums, at which time, now that's physical right there. The fact that Rizwan can say that makes him sound like an idiot. You're going to call our physical world into question while utilizing our physical world to communicate that idea. Thank you, Rizwan. Sit down. But we want to laugh, so we're going to go on. Okay. Are we all just artificial intelligence? Is modern society an illusion used to enslave our minds? As our bodies power a dystopian planet ruled by robots, is it possible? These are some of the questions Rizwan asks in his book. The digital trends author tells us that the simulation hypothesis is today discussed seriously in academia, and more popularly by people like Elon Musk, proving that just because you can figure out a way to make billions of dollars, it doesn't necessarily mean you're all that bright, Elon. The basic idea is, here's the basic idea, folks, of this this simulation hypothesis. Everything we see around us, including the Earth, is part of a very... what's called a massive multiplayer online role-playing game, and that we are merely players in this game. Hey, did these guys ever write songs for Rush? That sounds like it's right out of Limelight, for crying out loud. Rush was thinking about this 40 years ago, but they were high as a kite. I mean, they weren't professors at the... Anyway... So that's it. We're all just players in a video game of sorts. A massive multiplayer online role-playing game. Now, we have an explanation of this whole thing and why it's actually plausible by an Oxford professor, which automatically, there's an appeal to authority. You've got your Oxford professor. It's obviously smarter than you and I, right? Uh-huh. His name is Nick. And he came up with a clever statistical argument for the simulation hypothesis. Now, walk with me on this if you can. Now, if you're not a PhD physicist or an evolutionary biologist or what else, I mean, just, or if you're not a professor at university or a high school science teacher, or if you're not my seventh grade science teacher, which was the only time my mom and dad ever let me get an F, was on the test about evolution, when I answered every question with biblical retorts, and I got a zero on that paper. And the odd thing about that, now that was pretty cool that my mom and dad let me do that, but they still sent me back the following year, which that should have been a red flag. You know, that was a red flag for me in retrospect. Because later on, after I grew up, and I started talking to people who homeschooled their kids, I realized what happened to me. Anyway, let me get back. I don't want to lose track here. I want to explain to you the statistical argument for the simulation hypothesis. This is a bunch of heathens sitting around trying to figure out if they can make it a way that this isn't all real, so that they don't have to be held responsible for all the people they've hurt, all the lies they've told, and all of that. That's what this is. And here's the statistically, what does he call it? A clever statistical argument for why this is probably true. He says, suppose some civilization somewhere gets to the simulation point that it can create a highly realistic simulations. With more and more computing power, they can spin off new servers and new virtual civilizations at will. Billions or trillions of simulated beings would be within these role-playing games and these simulated civilizations. Therefore, the number of simulated beings would eventually become far more than the number of the biological beings. Meaning the probability is highly likely that you are a simulated being. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the clever statistical argument. But what that doesn't solve is where did the biological beings who created the game came from? And might they be God? And might they someday judge you anyway? Boys, put the guitars away. We don't have time for all that. All right, since I mentioned Elon Musk, I do want to comment on the SpaceX launch. I must say it was very impressive to see the rocket go and the three rockets land. That was, I gotta hand it to Musk's team there. That was pretty cool. All right, I'll give you that. Now, I was a little bit depressed by the fact that SpaceX's first commercial client was a Saudi Arabian conglomerate there to put up Arabsat, which is going to provide telecommunications and all that for the Middle East and North Africa and like that. But hey, I suppose shouldn't get depressed about things like that. I would have hoped it was something American, but it wasn't. It was... All right, but hey, if this is all a simulation, I don't have to feel so bad, right? Okay, now let's go to Pete Buttigieg because he's all the rage. Why? Because Matt Drudge obviously has a crush on him. That's why Pete Buttigieg is big news. He's the mayor of some small town in the Midwest that nobody ever heard of, except people who went to Notre Dame and their mom. Nobody else ever heard of South Bend, Indiana. People who were fleeing the south side of Chicago being shot at, they might have heard of South Bend. They ran through very quickly. But nobody ever heard of South Bend, and nobody certainly ever heard of the governor of South Bend until Matt Drudge fell in love with him. Anyway, now we know that Pete Buttigieg, I had a hard time with his name, and that's kind of embarrassing, but I read a story on it. It turns out that the letters and all that, they really don't make any sense to someone who speaks English. And so I don't have to feel bad that I first thought his name was Booty Gig. That's what I thought his name was, because that's what it looks like, is Booty Gig, which I thought was kind of funny for a homo. I just thought that was funny, that's all. I thought it was ironic. But it turns out it's Buttigieg, which is still ironic and still, I mean, it still draws a smirk, right? Buttigieg? Okay, anyway. I thought if you're a Buddhist, you're not supposed to judge. All right, that's from my stand-up act. We'll just move that aside. He's the mayor of a medium-sized Midwestern city, South Bend, Indiana. He's a Rhodes Scholar. He's a war veteran. He is a liturgically conservative Episcopalian. That's right. He claims to be a Christian. He cites St. Augustine as one of his religious influences. He's running for president. He's also a Democrat. He's also criticizing Donald Trump for his infidelity and lack of family values, is Pete Buttigieg. And, as I said earlier, he's a homo, is what he is. And I believe he is pretending to be married to a man, if I'm not mistaken. So, Buttigieg, I believe he announced that he's running for president today. And so we'll talk a little bit.
We got the Hickenlooper.
We got Hickenlooper. We got Buttigieg. How about that for a ticket? The Buttigieg Hickenlooper ticket. Or would it be the Hickenlooper Buttigieg? I don't know who would be on top on that ticket. I don't think you're allowed to say that when you're talking about Buttigieg. Buttigieg speaks openly and easily about his Christian faith, and he's the only Democrat who does that. Here's what he says. I'll let you people judge. Buttigieg says, quote, "I think it's unfortunate that the Democratic Party has lost touch with the religious tradition, and I think that I can help explain and relate our values. At least in my interpretation, it helps to root religion in a lot of what we do in I'm sorry, I can't. All right. At least in my interpretation, it helps to root in religion a lot of what it is we do believe in when it comes to protecting the sick and the stranger and the poor, as well as skepticism of the wealthy and the powerful and the established," unquote. All right. Now, here's the thing about me. Now, to me, that didn't sound all that open and easy. That sounded rather convoluted, what he said. There was a lot of I thinks and cans, and at least in my interpretation, it helps. There's a lot of this, and there's just an awful lot of extra words in there that you didn't really need to. He could just say, "My Christian faith guides my political judgment. I'm not ashamed of it." But that's not what he said, because that's not what he means. He's a Democrat, after all. Anyway, most Democrats who are drawn to him, according to, where did I get this? This is from the Atlantic Monthly, a left-wing magazine, by the way. This is a left-wing Christian author, Peter Wenner. He claims he's a Christian, except he's a liberal, so nobody believes him. At least I don't believe him. He says, "Democrats drawn to Buttigieg are embracing him not because of his faith, but because of his liberalism. They're willing to indulge the former so long as it advances the latter." And that used to be the case in the Democrat Party, see. Back when Bill Clinton had his 17-pound Bible that he used to carry into church every Sunday, that was back when you had to at least fake it and toe the line. You had to at least act like you believed in God. But now no Democrat pretends to be a Christian now, except here Pete Buttigieg. He's a throwback of sorts. Let's see. Now, Peter Wenner, the author, liberal author who claims to be a Christian, listen. You know how I know Peter Wenner is not a Christian? Because of what he says right here. Oh yeah, by the way, I'm not afraid to make that judgment. I know people say, I can't judge a man's faith. Well, I can. It says in the Bible, you know them by their fruits. So don't be a sucker, okay? If a man's fruits are dripping with wickedness and evil, then he's not a Christian. Give him the benefit of the doubt. Doubt his Christian faith so that you might help lead him to a true understanding of the living God so he doesn't burn in hell forever. So I give Peter Wenner, the author, the benefit of the doubt. I don't think he's a Christian, because here's what he says about the Bible. He says the Bible does not provide a governing blueprint. Okay, right there, you're like, wait a second. The Bible doesn't provide a governing blueprint? Okay. Now, it gets worse. He says it's silly to say that a close reading of the Gospels will tell us what the proper policy is, say, on school choice and the budget of the Department of Education. Really? Is that right? Okay, well, maybe you're reading a different Bible than I am. He says the Bible also can't help us with issues like undocumented workers, the top marginal tax rate, trade and deregulation, the opioid epidemic, the Syrian civil war, and the threat posed by North Korea. Well, sure, the Bible can help us with every one of those, you idiot. You obviously don't understand the Bible, which also leads me to believe you're not a Christian. That's all, Mr. Peter Wenner. I don't think you're a Christian, and I don't think Pete Buttigieg is a Christian. And the main way I know... Okay, now I can understand how people could read the Bible and they don't see it as a criminal justice guideline and a governance guideline, although it is. The Bible tells nations how to get along. It tells governments how they can work and when they're evil and when they're doing just. It lays out exactly what the government is authorized to do, and everything outside of that, we understand the government's not authorized to do that stuff. It's all in the Bible. And the Bible tells us about tax rates and about illegal aliens. And about the Department of Education, which the Bible never tasked the government with educating children. That's the parents' job. There should be no Department of Education. Boom, the Bible solves your budget problem right there. Department of Education goes away. Okay. But here's the thing about Peter Wenner, the alleged Christian author, and Pete Buttigieg, the alleged Christian homo mayor of South Bend, Indiana. They both advocate killing unloved people who cannot defend themselves. That should be your first red flag that someone is not a Christian when they advocate murdering innocent people. You don't get past that with me. There is no more discussion, except maybe I can lead you to understand the gospel. Perhaps we could start there, but don't tell me you're a Christian, especially while you're hanging out with your alleged husband advocating the murder of innocent people who cannot defend themselves. Just get out of here with that. All right, now speaking of that, we go to the pro-life industry file. The pro-life industry, for those of you who may not be aware, is the industry that has grown up on the pro-choice and the pro-life side of the argument, mostly on the pro-life side of the argument, which is lawyers who raise a lot of money and act like they're going to stop abortion. And they've been doing that for about 35 years that I can recall. On the other side, you have liberals who every time anything about abortion comes up, their job is to scream and screech and get red in the face and send out fundraising letters and raise money out in Hollywood. So the industry has now grown up now. People have probably retired out of the industry on both sides with very fat pensions, while the killing of these unloved innocent people who couldn't defend themselves just continues unabated. And let's get to some of that right now, because I go to the Detroit News, where a liberal columnist is reporting that pro-life activists are emboldened with a new conservative majority on the Supreme Court. Now, where they saw that, I have no idea. There's a conservative majority on the Supreme Court? Excuse me? Really? Okay. See, he's part of the industry. His job is to whip up the leftists and the post-abortive feminists and the lesbians to freak out. Oh, no, there's a conservative majority. There's a lot of money in that. You raise a ton of money if you send out a properly worded fundraising letter. Tell them how their abortion rights are all under threat. Tell all the lesbians and the homos and the trannies that their ability to have an abortion is being threatened. A lot of money in that. Anyway, emboldened by the new conservative majority, anti-abortion activists are pushing near total bans on abortion in a deliberate frontal attack on Roe v. Wade. All right, so let's get to this. In Mississippi and Kentucky, the leftists are freaking out because there's a law. They've passed a law in Mississippi and Kentucky that would ban most abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected. Yes, yes. And in Alabama, they criminalize abortions at any stage unless the mother's health is in jeopardy. All right. So here's the thing about abortion bans and abortion laws and abortion restrictions. So when you have qualifiers, all right, well, let's just go to Mississippi and Kentucky. Laws that would ban most abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected. Okay, because the word most is in there, you can translate that as none. It will ban no abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected. Because when an exception is written into a law like this, the abortionists will find a way to drive every abortion they want to do right through that exception. I'm convinced that's what exceptions are for. That's the fundamental purpose of exception. And that's why they write those exceptions, is so that they can keep having abortions. So they can keep killing these inconvenient, unloved people who cannot defend themselves. So when you see the word most, that means none. Over in Alabama, criminalize abortion at any stage unless the mother's health is in jeopardy. When you see the word mother's health, that means this will stop no abortions at all. But it will enable the pro-life industry to raise money and gin up a lot of strife and envy and grief on the other side, the pro-choicers. They'll drum up money and strife and grief and hatred. And the industry churns on year after year after year. Lots of, in fact, let me get to this. The Detroit News says activists and legal experts on both sides agree that no matter what happens with these laws and all these efforts and the Supreme Court, one thing they all agree on is that a Supreme Court decision is unlikely to come anytime soon. So the industry has plenty of time to gin up money and strife and hatred and vitriol and money and then a little bit more money and then some more money. And then to host some parties and to eat some lobster and some filet mignon and to raise some more money and have wine raise more money, and then have another dinner. Have a gala in Hollywood with the sequins and the beads and the wine and the New York Strip. And then we raise some more money. We give a fundraising speech and we give awards on both sides and we raise some more money. While the killing of inconvenient, unloved people who cannot defend themselves continues unabated. All right, and we can just let that play and let that play and let that play, because there is no limit to the amount of money that both sides are happy to make on this issue. No, no, I guess we can't do more. All right, although we certainly could. All right, all right, that's disgusting. It makes me sick what's happened to that. What's happening in that whole issue as actual innocent people are being killed? I can assure you people the living God is thinking about more than anything else is the blood that cries out to him from the ground, the blood of the innocents. And that includes the crime epidemic, that includes murder by abortion and all of that. And he will not tolerate it forever. So anyway, but let's go to something a little less, well, just a little less. Let's talk about immigration. Immigration is not the biggest issue on God's mind, but it seems to be the biggest issue on the mind of, well, everyone on Fox and MSNBC and CNBC and, well, not CNN, what's the other one? MSNBC, CNN, whatever, ABC, CBS, LSD, PCP, THC. So the funny story this week is that Donald Trump is considering dumping the catch-and-release illegal aliens into sanctuary cities. So if you don't understand the law, and I didn't fully until I took a look at it, the way the law is written in the United States, if you get here and you claim asylum and you say it just right, and the lawyers coach them how to do that down in El Salvador and Guatemala, exactly what to say. If you say it just right, if you say it the right way, then you're to be detained. And then we can only detain you for so long. We can only detain so many people in so many facilities. So basically, we have to let you go. And the people in Guatemala, El Salvador, and all those hellhole countries where life is hell on earth and they're trying to flee to a better place, although they teach them what to say, and then they come here and they say it, and it's just that's how it works, okay? And some people, there's something of an industry that's kind of grown up around that as well, as a matter of fact, Republican and Democrat sides. But so Donald Trump comes out and says, maybe we'll release them into the sanctuary cities. Because right now, you see, it's a few cities in Southern California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas who bear the brunt of all the releases. These people are being released all over the place in those states. Meanwhile, sanctuary states like New Hampshire, I mean, hardly any of them make it to New Hampshire, for crying out loud. They freeze to death before they can get there. But meanwhile, in South Texas, you're overrun with them. So Trump's like, maybe we should disperse these people around the country. And so anyway, on its face, you have to chuckle. And the thought of seeing a truckload of illegal aliens released at one of Bernie Sanders' three homes, I mean, that's kind of amusing. Can you imagine Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez opening the door to her luxury apartment and having 37 illegal Mexican men and Guatemalans and Salvadorans trot in and ask her for something to eat? I mean, that's fun to think about. But let's look at the morality of it, because that's what we care about. Okay, so Donald Trump is against catch and release. I'm against catch and release. Now, it's the law, though, right? So they're going to be released somewhere. So wouldn't it make sense for Donald Trump to release these people in a place where everybody loves them and wants them to move into their house and wants them to date their daughter and wants them to go to the same school with their son and wants them to share the same hospital ward with their grandmother? You know, like San Francisco and Denver and Los Angeles and just about every other major metropolitan city in the country that's run by Democrats and liberal Republicans they've declared themselves sanctuary. So shouldn't we dump these people over the gate at Chuck Schumer's house? Huh? Maybe if you could get past the machine guns and the walls and the bricks and mortar. Well, here's the thing. Is it immoral? Is catch and release immoral? Well, here's the thing. If you read the statutes as they're written that limit the time we can hold them and limit the space and the number, it's obvious once you read the way the law is written that the law was written to specifically facilitate illegal immigration. It was basically made, the laws were designed to work exactly as they're working right now. That's why they were written. They were written by immoral people. Guilty liberal criminals who feel so much guilt because they're so rich and they have so little talent and they contribute so little to society. I'm talking specifically about Congress people. They're so rich and fat and comfortable and they do virtually nothing. They feel horrible deep down inside. So they write rules to let the poor masses in. I mean, there's self-loathing involved. There's also, you know, wanting to stuff the Democrat ballot box with illegals who can't speak English. They'll vote Democrat. They'll vote for welfare. Anyway, so the laws are obviously written by immoral people to do something that is immoral. That's all over. That's all there is to say about that. So I think it would be incorrect for Donald Trump to use an immoral law written by immoral people that to do something immoral and to just transfer that immorality to another place. I think that would be wrong. Now, I don't think it would be wrong for the government on a systemic level, since apparently they can't change the law. I don't understand why, but I understand why they might not want to dump everyone in McAllen, Texas, and not dump everyone in Phoenix, Arizona, not dump everyone in El Paso. That I can certainly understand. And if some of them end up at one of Bernie Sanders' three houses, well, I mean, statistically, it's got to happen. I mean, statistically speaking, unless this is all just a simulation, and statistics don't really mean anything. All right, there you go. So, by the way, I do have to let you people know, I kind of creeped some people out when I told you all that I've been painting my house, and I keep finding what appear to be splatters of blood all over my house. It's as if a long time ago there's some sort of massacre here. Well, I figured it out. There has been a massacre going on, and it's been committed with fly swatters over the course of about 18 years. That's it. Have you ever thought about that? How many flies have you swatted? And every time you swat a fly, that's what it is. So that's why there's blood all over the house, is because of the fly swatters. So we've ended the investigation. The mystery has been solved. All right, now, lawyers have made their way into the Vatican. This is from the Bad Religion file. Let's see here. Lawyers are demanding that the Vatican denounce the decriminalization. All right. Lawyers are asking the Vatican, that means the Pope, to denounce the criminalization of homosexuality. What did I just say? I don't know. Lawyers ask, I'll just read it straight, right? Instead of trying to be a smart aleck. Lawyers ask Vatican to denounce criminalization of homosexuality. Okay. Where is that happening, by the way? Criminalization of homosexuality. I suppose they say it's happening in Brunei, where Brunei is now implementing Islamic law Islamic law, by the way, advocates stoning to death for adultery and homosexuality. But if you look at how it's practiced in the Muslim world, it's really not done on a fair and judicious basis. And therefore, the Islamists give a bad name to the idea that homosexuality and adultery actually are criminal offenses. But anyway, let's read the story. Human rights lawyers and gay rights advocates have urged the Vatican to issue a clear and unequivocal statement against the criminalization of homosexuality. First of all, you didn't have to say human rights lawyers and gay rights advocates. That's redundant because it's all the same pile. If you're a human rights lawyer, you either are a homo or you are advocating for homos. And so, as usual, the homos never miss an opportunity to never let a crisis go to waste. You've got Islamists in Brunei implementing Sharia law that would stone homos, and so the homos stand up and act like they're the most persecuted people on the planet. Meanwhile, there's only like 9 homos in Brunei, probably a lot less today than there was. So what are the odds that Pete Buttigieg is going to find himself under Sharia law in Brunei? Well, there's no chance of that. He'd probably be a Democrat frontrunner, the Buttigieg Hickenlooper ticket. Mm-hmm. Let's get that website. Let's get that .com before someone else. Buttigieg Hickenlooper. Get Hickenlooper Buttigieg, too, just in case. Anyway, 50 lawyers and gay advocates led by Baroness Helena Ann Kennedy. She's the director of the International Bar Association's Human Rights Institute. They met with Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Vatican's Secretary of State. And they gave him a study on homos and how great it is and all of that. Lady Helena, I'm sorry, Baroness Helena Ann Kennedy, Director of the International Bar Association's Human Rights Institute, said that the Cardinal is very responsive to the group, which the group was the pile of 50 queer lawyers that... anyway, listen, This is where the church is, okay, the Catholic Church. It's a wonder the nuns are outnumber the nuns. Did you get that one? All right, I'll add that to the stand-up act. Obviously, says Baroness Helena, there are issues that are doctrinal, but yada, yada, yada. You see, the thing is, there are issues that are doctrinal. And that's where the conversation should stop, Baroness. You and your 50 queers, get out of my office. But that's not what the Cardinal said. In fact, he entertained them for quite a while. They probably had some wine. And so you wonder, how do we get to a place where a menagerie of 50 flaming perverts would feel comfortable approaching the leadership of the Catholic Church on the issue of homosexuality? How did we get here? How did that happen? If there's one place a homo should feel uncomfortable, it would be at the Vatican. They shouldn't want to go there. They should be ashamed. But here's what happened. Here's what happened. The Vatican in 2008 called for decriminalization of homosexuality, but they opposed an unresolution on the issue because the church believed that other parts of it equated to same-sex unions with heterosexual marriage. So the Catholic Church became so confused that by 2008, they were calling for decriminalization of homos, but they wanted to preserve marriage. And so that doesn't work, you dope. You flip that P upside down, dope. You can't decriminalize homosexuality without criminalizing Christianity and without nullifying the idea of marriage. That's it. So the church became so confused. Now 50 flamers can walk right in and expect a high tea or something. It's unbelievable. All right. Well, there you have that one. There goes from the bad religion file. Now we go to reason number 1188 to get or keep your children out of the government schools, especially if you're in Rhode Island, where there's been a debate over a law that would make sex between teachers and students a crime. That's right. Even after the student has turned 16, this is a House bill. This is a proposed law that would make sex between teachers and students, even if the students reach the age of consent, it would make it illegal. Well, both teachers' unions spoke in opposition to the law, both the United Federations of Teachers and then also the local similar whatever they are. Basically all the teachers came out and said we're against it. As it currently stands, Rhode Island is one of a few states where it's legal for teachers to have sex with students once the students reach the age of consent. Almost no one seems to be aware of this loophole in the law, yet it leaves students without any protection from those who would sexually abuse them, yada, yada, yada. Well, I'll tell you what, another law isn't going to protect the students either against a teacher who wants to abuse them. And it's not a loophole in the law. There just isn't a law. Because this was unheard of in decades past of teachers molesting kids. Maybe once in a blue moon and the teacher had to leave town on a rail. Now it's a daily occurrence. I mean, your daughter or your son could be easily molested by a teacher, whether psychologically, spiritually, or even physically, on any given day, at any given government school, anywhere, even the best schools. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Drum roll. I love it. All right. Thank you to my extremely attractive audio engineer for her patience and her laughing at some of my jokes. Not all. She has some discretion. All right, let's get to Julian Assange, who was dragged out of the Ecuadorian embassy in London, looking like a white-haired version of Saddam Hussein popping up out of his spider hole. Wasn't that weird? Anyway, Julian Assange. And so there's the debate is he a journalist and a whistleblower, or is he a traitor? Is he an enemy of the state? All of that. I think you people know where I stand. But we have some newer listeners. And so I want to make it perfectly clear where I stand, okay? Julian Assange and not Peyton Manning. Why am I thinking Peyton Manning, for crying out loud? It's not even football season. Archie Manning? No. No.
Chelsea.
Not Chelsea. No. I can't remember his name.
Bradley.
All right. Julian Assange and Bradley Manning, they dress up their rebellion against just authority in a veneer of some romanticized rebellion against corrupt authority. And that's easy to do because there are plenty of corrupt authorities and there are plenty of corrupt things going on. But it's very easy to be in rebellion against corrupt authority and have people romanticize you and think you're great. But they're all about rebellion against just authority. That's what they are. I mean, you can tell by Bradley Manning, for crying out loud, he's a tranny. I mean, he's rebelling against his own DNA, for crying out loud. Anyway, what they did together was they published unredacted documents, knowingly stolen from the United States government. Knowingly stolen classified documents, unredacted, and that means they should both be put to, put on trial, and upon conviction, they should both be put to death. Even if Assange didn't work with Bradley Manning to steal the documents, he knew that they were stolen by a traitor who should have been put to death, but instead his sentence was commuted by another traitor, Barack Hussein Obama, who should be arrested, and Lord willing, he will be arrested one day, because what he's got coming on the other side, man, Barry really wants to have a chance to repent. And the only hope Barry Obama has of repenting is if he's put on trial for all the horrible, evil, wicked things he did, all the criminal behavior he did. And then maybe he would seek God, maybe. Because if he doesn't, that boy's going straight to hell with jet rockets, I'll tell you what. All right. So there you go. I think Julian Assange should be put on trial as soon as possible. And upon due conviction, he should be put to death. And Bradley Manning, unfortunately, I believe Barack Obama has put him legally out of jeopardy. But if there were any justice, he would be put to death too. Okay, let's move on from that. The New York Post has a great article talking about how Hollywood needs to stop glamorizing murderers, serial killers. And this is another thing I've noticed a spate of as of late. In addition to the multiverse and the simulation and the aliens and the spacecraft and the UFOs and all that, are all these movies about all these serial killers. And the New York Post lists them. These are movies that are coming out. Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile, The Story of Ted Bundy. That's the title. A Story About Charles Manson, Charlie Says. The Haunting of Sharon Tate, which came out last week. Two movies about Charlie Manson. And then it says Charlie Manson, who died in 2017, will also play a part in Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Okay. Now, how that works, I don't know. Maybe Tarantino was allowed to go in prison and film. Who knows? A bunch of corrupt perverts out in Hollywood. But I agree with the New York Post when they say Hollywood is glamming up and cashing in on the excruciating pain of others. They're glorifying murder, mass murder. And that should not be allowed, that's all. He said the New York Post also talks about how Hollywood producers are casting very attractive young male actors as these serial killers. Zac Efron, who I'm not familiar with, Matt Smith, who I don't know, and Darren Criss. Darren Criss, who recently won an Emmy for his performance as serial killer Andrew Cunanan. So out of all those names, the only one I'm familiar with is Andrew Cunanan, who was the actual serial killer. So I'm not familiar with these Hollywood actors, but the New York Post says they use good-looking young men to play these murders, which doesn't surprise me because they're all a bunch of disgusting perverts. I watched part of the Andrew Cunanan thing on, I forget, it was on cable. Anyway, it was, how can I put it? A glamorous, erotic homosexuality mixed up with murder. I had to turn it off because it creeped me out. I mean, that's really creepy stuff. Almost as bad as Cardi B. Has anyone heard of this actress? Or I don't know if she's an actress or what she is. Have you heard of this, my dear? He said he was extremely attractive. Audio engineer. A young entertainer, female, called Cardi B. Are you familiar?
Yeah, I saw
it. So anyway, I was dragged into a karaoke house in Philadelphia. I'll tell you what I saw on that screen would make a sailor blush, what she does in her video. It was unbelievable. I was like, is this legal? I mean, what kind of place are we in? What's going on here?
Where did you go?
It was a karaoke place.
What kind of place
are you? Well, they were playing Cardi B, and I'll tell you what.
I gotta talk to you.
Cardi B is the end of civilization, I'm telling you. That's all. I'll just put that right out there.
I need to talk
along
to
with
you.
All of this.
Where did you go?
Yeah, right. I know. You go out for some karaoke. I'm wanting to sing some Bob Seger or something.
Oh my gosh.
Well, at least Bob Seger's not the end of civilization.
He was.
So anyway, hey, but here's Bob Seger was not the end of civilization. All right. That was Nickelback. All right. Now, hold on here. And by the way, it's not just serial killer movies. By the way, where they're glamorizing degenerate, immoral, evil, wicked, dangerous behavior that used to be not just frowned upon, it used to be not allowed. You couldn't make a movie where the murderer seemed romantic and at the end you was sympathetic and all. You just weren't allowed to do that. But it's not just serial killers. Now there's this spate of degenerate homo rock stars. You've got the Freddie Mercury movie that was big. Now they got an Elton John movie coming out. I mean, what's next? Caligula? For crying out loud. It's unbelievable. What Hollywood is willing to churn out and what the people are willing to eat is just shocking. I mean, if you imbibe of that, I mean, you are just, you're lowering not just your IQ, but you're destroying the spiritual health of the health of your spirit and your soul is what you're doing. If you imbibe in that stuff, it's degenerate. It's pervert. I'm sorry. Well, I'm not sorry. I'm just saying it. That's all. I'm saying things that have been said for 5,000 years, but only for the last 30 years have we not been allowed to say them. And by the way, the 300 years that saw the greatest advancement in the civilization of humanity of all time was dominated by the ideas that these things are evil, perverted, corrupt, not fit for public talk, not to be discussed in mixed company, and only to be discussed in a trial, in a court of law, when someone's being put on trial for doing any of this stuff. All right. Now we'll go to we're running out of time. We'll go to the culture of death file. This is an unbelievable story of how degenerate our society's become. CNN reports that Jennifer Hart was drunk when she drove her 6 adopted children in their family SUV with her wife, Sarah, sitting in the passenger. I said with her wife. Yes, you heard me right. With her wife, Sarah, sitting in the passenger seat, looking up different ways to end a life. Yes, the SUV was carrying the Hart family, CNN says. So you got a couple of dykes who acted like they pretend they're married and they start adopting kids because everybody worships them, of course, because they're better than all of us because they're dykes. So they end up adopting 6 kids, right? Over the course of time. They adopted 6 kids. And I'll get back to what happened, but details have emerged about their wonderful family life that the children desperately sought help from neighbors at various times. Told neighbors that their parents abused them and starved them as punishment. These are the pair of dykes acting like they're married, who everyone in the neighborhood worshipped as wonderful people. They beat the kids. They starved the kids. Calls to the police on these 2 lesbian creeps began just 2 years after the Harts became parents, as CNN reports. They became parents. Isn't that nice? Days before the family died, Child Protective Services in Washington requested a welfare check, but no one answered the door of the family. CNN loves to stick that word family in there. The family was already gone. Why were they gone? Because the pair of dykes drove the 6 kids off a 100-foot Pacific Coast cliff off of Highway 101 in California. And CNN reports the tragedy took all 8 lives. Actually, it was the dykes. It was the perverts who took all 8 lives. It wasn't the tragedy. As the car was in motion, Sarah, who was acting like Jennifer's wife, searched this phrase: how long does it take to die from hypothermia while drowning in a car? As they drove their kids. Well, I mean, the coroner ruled last week unanimously, a coroner's board, that Jennifer and Sarah Hart intended to die along with their 6 adopted children, Marcus, 19, Jeremiah and Abigail, both 14, Devante, 15 years old, Hannah, 16, and Sierra, 12 years old. At first, it seemed unfathomable to everyone especially to the people at CNN. This is an unfathomable story that this could happen, until they started interviewing friends and neighbors and social workers, and it became clear that these were 2 abusive, evil people, which should have been obvious by their fruits, which were dripping with evil, as they publicly rebelled against their own sex and then encouraged other people in that rebellion. That should have been the first tip-off that these people were evil and capable of murder. That should have been the first. All right. Am I out of time yet? I'm almost out of time. In fact, what can I end with here? I don't know. I don't want to do that. Attorney Michael Avenatti has been charged with, 70 counts. Southern California and New York. Embezzlement. Not paying his tax. Out of all the things Michael Avenatti has ever done, the not paying his taxes doesn't bother me so much. But the embezzlement, the stealing, the pocketing, the stealing. Okay, there you go. Michael Avenatti turns out to be a creep. Shock of all shocks. Would have never thought that. Not Michael. No. He was an advocate for women. He was an advocate for women, wasn't he? All right. Meanwhile, in Chicago, just northwest of South Bend, Indiana, if you're fleeing, you may want to head for South Bend. The cold weather finally broke after a long, cold winter. That's right. It was warm in Chicago 2 weekends ago for the first time since December. So since like a month before Jesse Smollett faked that whole thing. It's been freezing in Chicago. I mean, so cold that the cockroaches and the mosquitoes and the flies all die. Just the one good thing about winter in Chicago is that all the bugs die. So it's been freezing there since December, but the weather finally broke a couple weeks ago. And during a period over 24 hours, 24 people were shot. Soon as the weather breaks, the gunfire erupts. The massacre continues. The slaughter continues. 24 people shot in a period of just over 24 hours, including a mass shooting of 6 people outside an afternoon baby shower in West Englewood. West Englewood. I believe that is where one of my vendors booked an Airbnb for the... I believe. I could be wrong about that. Mass shooting of 6 people outside an afternoon baby shower. 3 people died from their injuries, according to the Chicago Tribune. Really? Injuries? Injuries? Injuries are accidental. It's something you might suffer in a car accident or if you fall off your bike. These are not injuries. These are wounds like you experience in a war zone, which is what certain parts of Chicago have become. They have become a war zone. And I don't know, if I'm in Chicago, even though I don't like the snow, I'm praying for cold weather just because I'd like to live through the weekend. But that's what happens when you allow the government to be taken over by degenerates, perverts, thieves, liars, and murderers. Which is what every single person involved in governance on any level above, say, dog catcher or DMV processor, that's what you are participating in. So I encourage you young people, do not run for public office. You do not want any of that on you. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at AmericanRightToLife.com, and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview. Should the Lord return, should the Lord tarry, we will return. Should the Lord return, we won't be here. But should he tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.